Clark here in Portland just 2 weeks ago after a two-year transition to Salmon Safe Practices, certified Salmon Safe. So it's just a great example of city leading private industry and government. And we're now working across the region from BC all the way down into Northern California. But the city of Portland is really where all of this started. So I think, again, it's a huge tribute to Portland Parks. And also, I think, a tribute to Portland Parks in that the mayor for World Environment Day back in June challenged the entire city to follow the leadership example of Portland Parks and really look, really focus on watershed impacts and look at how we can all join together to reduce water quality impacts on the Willamette and have a river that is swimmable and just ready for recreation. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And now Mike Abate, the director of Portland Parks and Recreation, will talk about the benefits of this program for Portlanders.
Thank you, Commissioner. You know, you might be wondering, well, you know, why would Portland Parks and Recreation invest time in becoming Salmon Safe certified? And like Dan said, this is a decade-long effort. It's really because we want to create a park system that that is healthy for all users, from people to wildlife and including fish. We recognize, I think, here in the city of Portland, is that when we improve our environment for fish, wildlife, and healthy ecosystems, we're doing the same thing for people as well. So a moment ago, you were talking about continuing work in becoming an age-friendly city, an elder-friendly city. The same can be said about environmental friendliness. If it's safe for salmon, it's safer for people. So as a result, Portland Parks has put into place many, many management practices. It's pervaded our entire culture that support both regional, local, and citywide restoration efforts. For example, it's changed the way that we plan and design and maintain parks, particularly riparian areas, stormwater treatment, as the commissioner mentioned, and restoration work throughout our entire system. You know, one example is our integrated pest management system, which really is an effort to control and reduce the amount of chemicals and pesticides that we use throughout our parks. That's a key component of our Salmon Safe certification. We're very careful about chemicals. This Salmon Safe certification program allows us to make decisions based on science, on what are the best management practices for our parks. And in taking a collaborative approach with the Bureau of Environmental Services, state and federal agencies, and other partners, we really collectively maximize our contribution to salmon recovery. Finally, you know, having a third party, an independent third party, take a look at the Bureau from the outside and evaluate what we're doing is invaluable. And so this certification process is the result of years of dialogue, of back and forth, that Salmon Safe has helped us refine what we do and make sure that that our practices support fish and consequently support people.
Thank you very much.
At this time, I think Dan is going to present the commissioner with the most, maybe the most beautiful award that we've ever received.
So. Well, before
does this one go to her office also?
Not to mention that obviously the previous commissioner in charge of parks, Commissioner Fish, has worked diligently on this for the last 4 years prior to this. And Commissioner Saltzman, before that, what you were...
Yeah, I was just wondering who that sage parks commissioner was that originally obtained the Salmon Surf certification.
Absolutely.
Luminary.
That might be me.
It's obviously something that we care about as a city council, that we care about as a city. And so I'd like to invite the entire council to come forward to accept the presentation and a photo.
And we should note that the certification award is constructed, handcrafted from a recycled, legally obtained Oregon highway sign.
And for the record, it's going to be hanging in the parks department rather than in my office.
Okay, could you get it a little closer so we could all be in the picture? Come on. One more. Come on.
Paparazzi.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have to say, I'm relieved to learn that the fish friendliness of the Parks Bureau wasn't just an artifact of the name of the previous Parks Commissioner.
But please don't encourage him with that, Mike. Don't encourage him.
Not feed him that line.
An occupational hazard of being here. I'm something of a sidewalk supervisor for the Westmoreland Park project because I live in the neighborhood, and it's just pretty exciting to think about that. So the Reed College wetlands now have somehow reacquired a beaver population. So I guess next we'll have bears, you know, in the canyon at Reed College harvesting the salmon as they come upstream.
Harvesting the badgers.
So we're going to have a real outbreak of nature in that part of the city. But this is pretty impressive. And the award overall is impressive, and then the individual actions like those that we're taking are going to really be transformative and wonderful. So thanks for great work. Great. Thank you all.
Thank you, man.
Okay. Our next item is 977, and it's a proclamation.
Great Oregon Shakeout.
It's a proclamation, so let me read that first, and then can turn it over to Commissioner Novick, and I know Carmen is here. It says, whereas the City of Portland's highest priority is ensuring the safety and well-being of its residents, and whereas the region has experienced major seismic events in the past, including catastrophic earthquakes off the Oregon coast, along the Cascadia subduction zone, and high-magnitude crustal earthquakes within the Portland urban area, and whereas there's no disagreement among the members of the scientific community that devastating earthquakes will occur again and significantly affect the residents of Portland and the entire region, and whereas increasing awareness about seismic safety and practicing what to do before the next earthquake strikes will help to reduce the loss of life, injuries, and property damage, and whereas during an earthquake, the safest way to protect yourself is to immediately drop cover and hold on, and whereas tens of thousands of residents throughout Oregon, including Portlanders, will practice the drop cover and hold on technique during the Great Oregon Shakeout Earthquake Drill on October 17th, 2013 at 10:17 a.m., and whereas city employees are encouraged to participate in the Great Oregon Shakeout, now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim October 17th, 2013 to be the Great Oregon Shakeout Day in Portland and ask all residents to participate in the drill and observe this day. Commissioner Novick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, Bill Haley in the Comet sang Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which kind of rhymes with drop, cover, and hold. So I hope that will help people remember that when the big shake, rattle, and roll comes, you should indeed drop, cover, and hold. Emergency preparedness begins at home, and before introducing Carmen, I'd like to make sure that each of my colleagues has the form that FEMA has prepared to develop a family emergency plan so that you and your family know how you're going to get in touch with each other, where you will go, and what you will do in an emergency. So here are copies of that form for each of you. I'd like to thank all of the community organizations that are participating in our emergency preparedness fair, Oregon Emergency Management, the Red Cross, the neighborhood emergency teams, PREP Oregon. PREP stands for Planning for Resilience and Emergency Preparedness. FLUSH, Public Hygiene Lets Us Stay Human, that helps us, they're trying to figure out how we prepare for disposal of human waste in an emergency, which is a real issue. And the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, including Dan Douthat, who's worked hard on the shakeout. And now I'm pleased to introduce Carmen.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Carmen Merlo, Director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. Arguably, Portland's largest threat is from a catastrophic earthquake. And unlike places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and even Seattle, Portland really doesn't have a history of recent earthquakes. In fact, our last major earthquake happened long before Portland was settled. On January 26, 1700, we had a magnitude 9 earthquake. And the scientific community is pretty sure that we're going to have one in the near future, although we don't know when. But if that weren't enough, we also have 3 crustal faults here in town. each capable of also producing catastrophic damage. So it's really important to use opportunities like this drill to practice what to do during an earthquake, which is drop, cover, and hold on. I do want to add that one important element of that is to then evacuate once the shaking stops. That's really important. Many of our structures here are not retrofitted, and we do anticipate several aftershocks after a large earthquake, so it is important to remember to also evacuate once the shaking stops. Preparedness really is a shared responsibility, and so I encourage all of you and your families to get prepared, and there's really three easy ways to do that. Assemble an emergency kit, and if you've all familiar with the Oregon Resilience Plan, there's really been a recent paradigm shift where 3 days is no longer an adequate amount of time to get prepared. We're really talking about at least 1 to 2 weeks, if not longer. So make a plan. And then, obviously, stay informed. And one way to do that is to register at www.publicalerts.org to get up-to-date information. There's other things you can do to make sure that your home is safe. I know Commissioner Novick recently retrofitted his house. I retrofitted my 1906 house a couple of years ago. Also want to make sure that you've got your water heater strapped. We know that after large earthquakes, one of the major damages is from catastrophic fires that spread very quickly, and most of it is actually due to tipped water heaters. Water heaters also provide a source of emergency water for you after an emergency. So I just want to close by thanking Commissioner Novick for his leadership on this issue and your support of our program. I do want to encourage all of you to go downstairs. We do have quite a few vendors and people to provide emergency information, so thank you very much.
Carmen, I have one question, if I could. Are we still operating under the old protocol that in the mayor's absence, the president of the council is the point person?
That's correct.
And since that changes every 6 months or so, are we doing sort of regular refreshers on what that means?
Absolutely, and we have one scheduled for November 8th.
Thank you.
Good. Other questions, comments for Carmen? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll all be paying attention tomorrow at 10:17. Thank you. Commissioner Novick, I believe this is for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to add, actually, coincidentally, my daughter, who works at the downtown Target, and I were commuting into work together this morning and had a fairly intense conversation about care of pets during an emergency, and that would be her first thought. Her first thought was, how are we going to put leashes on the cats who are inside cats? And I mentioned that I thought that was probably not feasible in the time allowed. That is something that I think many children and indeed adults are going to be wondering about, is how do we care for our pets? So I think that should be included in a family's evacuation plan, because if that's what you're going to be thinking about, then you need to have a plan for it.
Without being too flippant, most of us have some experience with herding cats. So,
well, knowing how difficult it is to get them into their boxes to take them to the vet,
yeah,
I think that was actually a pretty cogent point on her part.
Yeah, so that emergency food needs to include the pets as well as the people. So one more thing to make sure we think about. Good work. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the regular calendar, item 992.
Authorize a 3-year contract with Dr. David M. Corey for $225,000 and Dr. Sherry L. Harden for $45,000 to provide psychological and fitness for duty examinations.
Okay, and we have a panel here this morning to present on this, starting with our Chief Procurement Officer. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Christine Moody from Procurement Services. Before you, you have an ordinance recommending authorization of a contract with David N. Corey for psychological evaluations for internal and external Portland Police Bureau applicants, and a contract with Harden Psychological Associates for fitness for duty and promotional psychological evaluations. Portland City Code Chapter 5.68020 exempts psychological evaluation services from following the traditional request for proposals process and allows for direct contracting of service providers. Given the nature of these services, the city decided to use a modified process that allowed for evaluation of providers through a request for resumes process. The committee selected Dr. Corey and Dr. Harden as the most qualified applicants. Harden Psychological Associates is a state-certified MWESB business. New criteria has been added to these contracts to include training of additional psychologists from underrepresented and racial and ethnic groups in police psychology and reporting back to the city every 6 months on the progress of this multicultural competency model. At this point, I will turn it over to Kathy Henson to talk more about the selection process.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Henson. I am the personnel manager at the Portland Police Bureau, and I was on the selection committee for this process, as was Derek Rodriguez, to my right, at captain at the Portland Police Bureau, Joyce Harris, who's a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and Dr. Brandy Etheridge, who's a member of the City Procurement Services Minority Evaluator Program. We had five people apply for these contracts in total. Of the five, all five applied for the pre-employment contract. Of those five, three specifically additionally applied for the fitness for duty contract. We held, and Dr. Etheridge also is here today, we held interviews on Wednesday, June 19th, all five in one day. And then we, as a committee, met on June 26th to talk about, kind of debrief from the interviews and talk about discussion about approach to the selection process of the psychologists from the information we had. And then we went away, we did our scoring, and then we came back together on July 9th, and we discussed, we spent several hours together. We had really great discussion. And we learned a lot from each other. Some of us were able to fill in other things people didn't hear and did hear, because it's a lot of writing. It's a lot of dialogue to digest in one day. We came away with consensus to give the fitness for duty contract to Dr. Harden and to offer the pre-employment contract to Dr. Corey. I then made those recommendations to then Assistant Chief Hendricks, who then presented them to the chief, and that's my understanding what he wanted to go with was to provide those offers on those contracts.
Great. Thank you. Captain
Rodriguez. Derek Rodriguez.
Nice to be able to refer to you by that title, Captain.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I was part of the panel, and I just wanted to say on behalf of the Portland Police Bureau, thank the Albina Ministerial Alliance for being part of the process, and it truly was inclusive and transparent, and we did have a lot of engaging conversations with the panel. And we had a vested interest in all of the candidates, and it didn't really matter to us who got the contract. And I just wanted to let you all know that. So.
Good. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thanks very much. And I think we have some others here to testify as well.
So we have six people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are T. Allen Bethel, Dan Handelman, and Joe Walsh.
Don't see Dr. Bethel.
Sorry. Dr. Bethel is actually our department board.
Oh.
And I texted him about 10, 15 minutes ago, and she asked me to do what he said loud.
Okay. Well, we'll take him when he comes. Come on up, Dan.
Then we'll go with Mark J. Hoff-Hines.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning, Mayor, members of council. I'm Dan Handelman. I'm a member of Portland Cop Watch. I'm also on the steering committee of the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. And I read through the contracts, and it's kind of a mixed feeling I have today, because we've noticed for many years that Dr. Corey's been the sole practitioner doing these interviews with police about their psychological capabilities to be police officers, and he was a sole practitioner until recently. He's been doing this since 1999, and there was no diversity. This contract opens that up. There's now a woman who's going to be doing the psychological exams for reentry for officers who've been off on stress leave, Dr. Harden. I'm not familiar with her work at all, but it's good that we have some diversity coming into this position finally. But Dr. Corey has won the bulk majority of the contract to screen new candidates to be police officers. And one of the things that I think came up during discussions leading up to this point was to ask that Dr. Corey, and presumably anybody that gets one of these positions, go to the new training, the institutional racism training that's been designed. And I didn't see that anywhere in this contract, and I don't know if that's still an expectation of the people who won this contract. So I think it would be a good thing. Since the sergeants are about to go through that training, it seems like an easy time to plug these folks into that training as well. It's also it's a good, again, development that Dr. Corey, under his contract, is required to develop psychologists from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups, I'm quoting the contract there, by offering training to doctorate candidates from Pacific University. And the idea, as I understand it from the contract, is to promote diversity on a national level so that there will be more people of color qualified to screen police officers that can get this job, not just here in Portland, but anywhere in the country, which is another good thing. There's also, I mentioned, the contract of some kind of a longitudinal study that apparently Dr. Corey is working on to look at predictors for which officers will end up being disciplined, will have sustained complaints against them, which ones will use excessive force, and which ones will commit sexual misconduct, which is something we've been urging the city to look at for many years. So I'm hoping that the 6 months report includes all that. I didn't see any mention in the contract about working with people who have mental illness, like screening officers to see how they might interact with them, which is interesting since we're in the middle of the DOJ agreement, and I'm hoping that that is somehow going to be part of what they're looking for in the new candidates. I think that Dr. Harden's work to get not only bring people in for fitness for duty exams, but for doing the 360 evaluations when officers are going to be promoted is a very important part of what's going on. And again, we hope that maybe hopefully she'll gain enough experience where next time when the contracts come up in 3 years that she and Dr. Corey can compete against each other, and maybe we'll see somebody else finally take over this job.
Okay. Thank you. Can I have a follow-up question, yeah, Mayor? Thanks. Dan, on behalf of Cop Watch, mm-hmm. are you urging us to support this ordinance?
Well, the selection process is what it is. The only people who applied were screened by people that we weren't directly involved in this. It's a step forward, and whether or not I don't see any reason not to do this. It's only 3 years instead of 5 years, which is what the past contracts have been. But I do hope that this 3-year period will be used to develop other people's skills so that next time there's real competition from hopefully from more women, more people of color to do these jobs.
Thanks. Other questions? Thanks, Dan. I'll get a response on your points in a few minutes from staff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. We have a great concern with the process. It seems to us that when we come before you to comment on this, it's a done deal. I mean, you got so many high-level people that have given their okay on this that for citizens or organizations to come and give you their opinion, it's kind of a waste of time. And we start with the premise that we don't trust you very much. So we need some indications that the process itself would lend that once the police chief and the assistant police chief and staff come up with names of recommendations to you, it's a rubber stamp deal. And if you go back into your history, you'll see that you rubber stamp just about everything that comes from staff or police chief. And that's our biggest complaint. We don't like Dr. Corey. He's been around too long. He's been involved in this procedure for a long period of time. And what we find that we have a police department that beats people. That's what they do. They beat people, and they get away with it. And it hasn't changed. And this guy is making a couple $100,000. $300,000. Nice job. And they get away with it year after year. And you do nothing because you rubber stamp it. You bring us in here and you sit here and let us talk for 3 minutes and then you rubber stamp it. And I know that irritates you, Amanda, but it's true. If you go back in history, it's rare that you guys hold up any kind of reports and say, well, let's think about this for a while and bring in some other people like Dan Haldeman or ACLU, those kinds of people that would come in and tell you the truth, or the Lawyers Guild or the lawyers that sue the city a lot with police brutality. This guy's been involved in this for how long? 10 years? Too long. He hasn't done his job. Saved the $300,000. Give it to somebody else because nothing's happening here. Thank you.
I should know better than to dispute, especially with you, Mr. Walsh. However, on this particular item, it came before us a year ago. People testified and said this is not right. The council listened under Mayor Adams. We did the whole process over again. We included the Albina Ministerial Alliance in the process. It came out with the same result, although with a slightly different result since we now have Dr. Harden involved getting part of the contract too. But to assert that the council didn't listen and that the process is just the same is simply not so.
Okay. When we argue with you that you don't listen to us or you don't bring us into the process at the proper time, all right, when you bring in the same people over and over and over again, whether it's the ministers or anybody else, if you keep bringing them in, what happens is they become very friendly with this council. Just like when I come here every week and you see me, you start calling me by my first name and I start calling you by your first name. It's very friendly in the hallway. It's a battle in here, but it's very friendly in the hallway. How you doing? Okay. Well, if you do that long enough, it's very hard to go after and throw rocks at somebody that you like. I don't like any of you.
Okay,
and I work at that.
I'm going to keep calling.
I'm answering the question.
I'm going to keep calling Dan by his first name, and I haven't seen him become co-opted. So let's move on to Mark.
Well, I'm Mark J. Alfines, Jr. of UCARE. I'm in agree with Cop Watch as well. your secretary or whatever can bring around the cards. I actually got cards now made for you guys, so you can actually check out what I got going on. I'm also going to try to get involved with Cop Watch here as well, but I implore you that in this, that Cop Watch keeps more look on it as well, and keeps in contact with me as well as you guys to keep these guys accountable as well, because obviously Engstrom, for example, the one that just beat a service animal and pepper sprayed homeless people for no reason, was one of these guys that was actually interviewed by this guy. So obviously he didn't do his job. He has a tendency to do this. Sanders does it. And, I mean, I thank you, Amanda, by the way, for that comment and letting us know that that's what the process has been. I commend you on that. And also, I just want to let you know, as of October 8th, I sent you guys this. But I also sent you guys another email today. I appreciate you guys. If you guys can, I implore you guys to, put forth any possible donations so I can help out the homeless. If we can't get anything immediately, at least I can help out with what I can help out, whether it's monetary or whether it's items, whether it's sleeping bags, whether it's anything. I implore you each individually to, and I have a prediction that only Amanda Fritz so far will be the one to even respond to my email. The fact is, let's see if you guys actually put something forth personally out of your own pockets. It's all secure. It's PayPal. It's actually a full organization. It's not nothing just legitimate. It doesn't go straight in my pocket. It actually goes forth to these people that are actually out here and that are going to suffer this winter. And I appreciate you guys.
All right.
See what you do.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you. See, Dr. Bethel has arrived.
Yes. Dr. Bethel, Peter Godicelli, and Joel K. Sievers are the last three who signed up.
Okay. Other two here? Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, President of the Alabama Minister Alliance and pastor of Maranatha Church and board member of TriMet. That was across the street dealing with our disability citizens this morning for TriMet. Thank you for the opportunity to share before you this morning on the contract to the Police Psychological Services, which is a very vital and important contract to the hiring of the right people, retaining and determining the suitability of returning officers. The council's support in pulling the contract from the consent agenda about last year was a step in the right direction. And while we did get the same results as I heard Commissioner Fritz saying as I came in with the same psychologist, a process I do believe was one that was opened up to a wider range of candidates. The need for Dr. Corey to diversify, to train others, and allow them to get experiences so that in the future his experience in this field does not make him the only one to apply nor exclude others from having a level playing field and rule to apply and have some measure of success. When there's only one person who gains the experience and you write a contract or a request that says one must have 5 years, 6 years, 7 years in experience, we also want to be able to say that there could be related experience that also could be applied. And if no one ever gets the opportunity to provide the services, then the required experience will never be available for another person to apply. A few things I do want to point out in the time that I have remaining, about a minute and a half. Dr. Corey has asked in recognizing to a longitudinal study about predictions that cops will end up being disciplined, have sustained complaints against them, use excessive force. That's on page 610 of 10 in his contract, point J, under the statement of work. What I am concerned about is that there is nothing in those factors that deal with racial profiling or mental illness. And being that the DOJ's issues are around that and the continuing concern of the community around racial profiling and, quote-unquote, pretext stops, that should be a part of what he would be looking at in terms of those indicators. Also, in Dr. Sherry Harding's contract, which will be on page 5 of 10 in her contract, number 17 in the email document that was online, and also point J under the statement of work. She is being asked that anyone she trains to be a psychologist for these purposes must use the APA-approved courses on diversity and cultural sensitivity. This is not in Dr. Corey's contract. He should be doing the same to ensure consistency, understanding, and accountability. We want to request that or actually require the psychologist to attend the institutional racism training that has been put together by the CPRC and the Bureau. And actually, I would hope that they would voluntarily just decide that they would come. Thirdly, Chief Reese often talks and says when he signs off that there's no further community input needed. And while that can be true on some of the things, I would hope that he would come to understand that community will hold him accountable, will hold the Bureau accountable. And in community policing, that's key, community. So when this contract is awarded today, I hope the two psychologists will work to have more diversity on their staffs involved in this work, and that in the future we do not have extensions as a matter of formality, but a fair, open, competitive process to gain the best psychologists and diversity for this vital and important work. The AMA thank all of you for your support in opening this process to more transparency and urge you to award the contracts today, giving consideration to the things mentioned, and seek to have them incorporate in some ways as the contracts go forward. And we call upon Dr. Corey and Dr. Harden to voluntarily attend the institutional racism training by the CPRC. Thank you so much for your time.
Dr. Bethel, thank you so much for that. Have you emailed that to us?
No, I haven't, because I was finishing all of this up about midnight last night.
Well, it's,
I will make sure this is forwarded to you.
It's very cogent, and my inclination would be to delay approving the contract until we can discuss and look at amending to put in the points that you just mentioned. Would that be acceptable
we'll bring
to you?
Back yes. up to respond oh, about that. Yeah, we'll bring. These are good points.
Thank you.
We'll bring Christine and company back up. So. Thank you, Dr. Bethel.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Morning.
Wow. Good morning. Well, yeah, somebody that was me a few years ago was chased down the street over by Geldwin Field, Fred Myers, for $2.50 worth of sandwiches. Jason A. Worthington, Washington Hendricks, Hubbard put a gun to my head while I was in my boxers outside of Multnomah County Jail. Okay, now, you know, they broke my teeth. There was blood all over the place, and these officers were laughing about it. I was going to sue Multnomah County for $1,226, maybe $257,000, but my attorney cost $10,000. Now that the case has been basically expunged from the file, the FBI attorney costs $25,000. So it would be $126,000 and 57 cents that I'd be prosecuting for. They moved me from one squad car to another. So the video will probably be, you can't probably find the video, but they I believe they took me to a hospital over in the Pearl District. I'm not sure exactly which one that is. But yeah, you know, I believe some people need help. I believe some cops need psych reviews, but also the people in the public also need need clarification of this. Maybe attorneys like Alexander Cambier at Multnomah, at Portland, he is a law firm over here in Portland. I don't know. But that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks,
okay,
Joel.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
Anyone else signed up?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Then let's let's call the team back up and talk about the points that have been raised. Both Dan Handelman and Dr. Bethel talked about the institutional racism training, and then the questions of consistency of the two contracts on a couple of points, sensitivity screening for ability to understand issues of mental illness, your comments and suggestions about where we are and do we need to make some changes in the contract language?
So, yes, Mayor, the contracts that are attached to the ordinance are not finalized, and they are substantially similar contracts. So the comment about the institutional racism training can be added into that, and also the points that Dr. Bethel raised about the consistency between the training in the Hardin contract and the Corey contract, that can be added as well.
Okay. I'd like to see that.
And how about adding an emphasis on addressing racial profiling and mental illness indicators when they're assessing the offices? Can that be added too?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Other guidance, suggestions? Great. So this I believe, comes back for second reading. Where'd it go? Yes. Comes back for second reading. So unless there's any further council comments, please make those revisions to the ordinance. I'm sorry, to the contracts, as we've just discussed, and then we'll see them next week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. 993.
Authorize the Bureau of Transportation to acquire certain permanent and temporary rights necessary for construction of the Northeast 112th Avenue and Northeast Mark Street LID project through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Good morning. Commissioner Novick.
Mr. Mayor, the general project character and scope of the Northeast 112th and Northeast Mark Street LID project is to remove the existing dirt, gravel, and or hard surface, properly grade streets, construct an asphalt street, construct stormwater drainage facilities, extend an existing sanitary sewer, construct sidewalks, and plant street trees. And the project requires acquisition of certain private property interests to construct the project by April 1st, 2014, so the construction can be on schedule. All property owners abutting the planned improvements have been invited to project meetings with additional outreach made to interested parties in East Portland. The Park Rose Neighborhood Association was briefed on the funding and scope of the overall project during the LID petitioning LID formation. And I'll turn it over to Martin Maloney and Andrew Abbey to elaborate and answer any questions.
Mr. Novick. Members of the council, my name is Marty Maloney with the City of Portland Right-of-Way. I'm here to answer any questions you guys might have in regards to the Northeast 112th and Northeast Marks project condemnation ordinance. Basically, as part of the project, we'll have 10 property owners that will be affected with a combination of different easements from dedications, slope easements, culvert easements, and as well as temporary construction easements. The ordinance basically is being, we have the ordinance for the ability to offer just compensation as well as, if necessary, to condemn on the properties, which at this point, from talks with property owners, doesn't seem like that would be necessary. So if you have any questions.
None of the property owners have expressed concerns about this project?
About the right-of-way portion, we haven't heard anything.
So. And on the assessment issues, or maybe Andrew can comment on that. But.
I don't have anything really to add. This has been a very extremely complicated project from an engineering perspective. For example, we're trying to get rid of a septic tank in a leach field area that's next to the Columbia Slough, and my engineering colleagues have done excellent work in terms of coming up with a physical solution, so we're now in a position to move forward with acquiring our property rights. So the scope elements on the project have been in response to property owner request, and so the right-of-way acquisition just naturally follows us solving the problem that they're asking us to solve. And just to echo what Marty said, I think everybody's looking forward to the project being built, and no one has expressed any concerns to me about the right-of-way acquisition.
Thank you.
Further questions for staff? Thanks very much. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
So it's an emergency ordinance. Let's take action. Roll call, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work. Aye.
Hales.
I think the easy ones are all done. Aye.
Right.
994, please.
Amend intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation for the Southwest Moody Avenue project, Southwest River Parkway to Southwest Hamilton Court to extend the completion date and project boundary.
Commissioner Novick.
Mr. Mayor, colleagues, the Southwest Moody Avenue, Southwest River Parkway, Southwest Gibbs Street project is in the adopted North McAdam Transportation Development Strategy. On October 21st, 2009, the Oregon Transportation Commission approved an amendment to the STIP that programmed $12 million in OTIA funding for the project. This amendment extends the completion time of the original IGA to allow more time to complete the identified work and also allow adequate time for further transportation analysis of the Southwest Moody and Southwest Hamilton Court intersection.
Okay, great. Anyone here to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay, moves to second reading. Thank you. 995.
Approve and adopt zoning confirmation letter responding to requests for zoning confirmation on Lot 7, Station Place, submitted by Right to Dream 2 and Williams Dane and Associates, Inc.
Fritz.
Mayor, in response to your request for a little more time, I request that this be pulled back to my office.
Okay. Without objection. Sorry. Okay, we'll take public testimony before I take action. Come on up.
Is there testimony if there's no objection?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We'll take very brief testimony. Sorry, since I already indicated that we would. Okay.
I have to be brief.
Yes.
I'm Irish.
One can try.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I don't speak for R2-D2. I have great admiration for them. But our organization has not been involved in this move. We saw this move as a very simple, easy move. You were taking 75 people and moving from point A to point B. Pretty simple stuff. Until the human condition gets involved. And people say, not in my backyard. You ain't moving these people into my backyard. I'm a cocktail liberal. I talk about good stuff. I'll tell you how much I give to charity, but you ain't moving those people into my backyard two blocks away from my condominium. Are you nuts? That's the cry that we're hearing. And who do we hear it from? We hear it from the people in the Pearl District. the cocktail liberal district, the people that think they're doing good stuff and they're not. It's an easy move, people. You got a big problem on the streets. This is easy. Do it. Take some time and do it.
Thanks.
You want 10 minutes? Mayor, take the 10 minutes. Don't go to China, because you're not going to learn anything there. Stay here. You got a problem.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask if I could have my 3 minutes, please, on my communication, if I could possibly do that. It will take me possibly
we'll
three.
We'll give you 3 minutes, Lightning. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Homeless Alliance. Basically, in my opinion, the ultimate dream for R2-D2 is to end up with ownership of your own site, such as they wanted to do originally at Dignity Village, but they were not able to end up doing that. Again, I think you should stay where you're at. Let me explain why. Without the absolute generosity shown by Michael Wright to R2-D2 and the homeless community, chances are R2-D2 group would not be the success they are today. PDC has stated an interest in purchasing Michael Wright's property. An appraisal has been ordered. It appears things are still moving forward. R2-D2 should stay at their current site, and in my opinion, it should not have any effect on the overall sale. The amended terms of the settlement agreement should be as follows. A, Michael Wright's Burnside property, any and all fines be waived by City of Portland. B, upon closing of Michael Wright's Burnside property by PDC, R2-D2 will have no later than 6 months to vacate property. Estimated move time from today's date would be approximately 1 year. C, Bureau of Development Services agrees Lot 7 Northwest Lovejoy Court that an amendment will be made stating Lot 7 will be used for parking only, no other uses allowed. D, at the closing of Michael Wright's Burnside property to PDC, Michael Wright agrees to donate $150,000 to the nonprofit R2-D2 with the intended purpose of purchasing land for the next R2-D2 site. E, the Chinatown neighborhood and the Pearl District neighborhood will rally together to create several fundraisers with proceeds being earmarked for the purchase of the next R2-D2 group's property. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel.
Yeah, I definitely think that R2-D2 should move. We also heard that, you told us that you visited New York, Ground Zero, and I wonder how that, I'm sure that opened up your eyes to what's going on. I spoke to R2-D2 yesterday and the day before, and they said that they found a geological site where they're digging over there, and that the move is on postponed. Or is it that it's postponed because the people in the Pearl District are coming at City Hall with bribes of money to have them not be moved there because they want a hotel built there or something? I totally think that homeless people have a bigger place here than a hotel. I mean, there's hotels all over. You got the Marriott, you have the Benson, you have what else hotels? There's a lot. The Hilton? Yeah, and I definitely think that the move would be right for R2-D2, you know.
All right. Thank you all. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Mayor, in response to the testimony, let me be very clear. We still have a settlement agreement that specifies that a use agreement for the move to the camp to the new site must be finalized by October 28th. To date, nothing has been put on the table as an option otherwise, nor indeed any additional financial assistance. So we are delaying this possibly for a week to give the chance for that to happen. But we do have a definite timeline that it, something needs to happen very soon, and we'll be moving forward with that.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's move to Commissioner Frizzell.
May I respond to that, please?
No, no. Let's, we're not going to have a debate here. So
I mean,
it, she wants it back to her office for a little short time. That's where it's going. So.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. One more regular item, and then we'll go back to the items that were pulled from consent. 996.
Amend protected sick time code to clarify various provisions.
Second reading. Roll call.
Novick.
I'm very, very proud of council having provided for paid sick time in the city of Portland. I'm still more proud of this than anything else that we've done, even though it was well underway when I took office, and I really can take no credit for it. And I'm very pleased with the additional work that Commissioner Fritz has done on it, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick, and indeed every member of this council can and should feel proud of this. We unanimously adopted the regulations in March, and there's been some good discussions since then. Obviously, everybody continues to be very engaged and strongly supportive of this ordinance. All the changes that we're adopting today are a result of going through the administrative rules comments, and we received many comments from individuals, businesses, and unions. The changes are a result of some of the most common remarks and the most pointed ones that we wanted to make sure were clarified. And there are no substantial changes to the ordinance. I will bring an ordinance to the council for the contract with the Bureau of Labor and Industry soon, which will have guidelines from the Labor Commissioner on enforcement and how we will ease into the use of and enforcement of this law in the first 6 months of its use. I want to particularly thank Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian for his partnership on this. He and his staff have been absolutely outstanding throughout the process, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work with them. The Bureau of Labor and Industry will be the main point of contact starting in January for questions and concerns regarding this ordinance. In the meantime, Tom Bazo in my office continues to be the lead staff person working on it, and we will continue to be working with the community and with all stakeholders to do whatever is necessary to make sure that this works. We do understand that the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, IATSE Local 28, the Stagehands Union, is currently negotiating their contract, which may include a similar provision to the paid time off that the construction trades contracts contain, in which is included in this set of amendments. We will certainly be considering additional amendment packages as we continue to work through this process. It is a groundbreaking, one-of-a-kind national trendsetter, so we want to make sure that we get it right. If we need to do an adjustment for the stagehands, if their contract includes a cashback that's equal to or better than the earned sick time provision, then we will certainly do that. So I appreciate the ongoing work on this, the engagement of all five members of the council, and the strong support of the community. I'm very proud of this, too. Aye.
Fish.
Commissioner Fritz, thank you for shepherding the code changes to this successful conclusion. I, too, was proud to serve on a council that unanimously supported earned sick leave for all employees. And in my role as liaison to Venture Portland, I look forward to working with you and with Boley to make sure that particularly our small employers understand what their obligations are under the law and help them with the during the transition period. Thanks again for your tremendous leadership on this issue. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
You may have noticed there was a film crew wandering around here earlier, and that's because there was a Japanese national television crew in town who came here originally to look at livability and sustainability issues, and then they got diverted to talking about the commission form of government. So they're doing a story about the commission form of government, which is hard to explain to people in one language, much less translated to another. But, you know, I've talked a lot lately about one of the characteristics of Portland, and I think it's relevant here, and that is we have a propensity, in part thanks to this form of government, better than other governments do, to actually turn our values into real things. You contrast us with the gap between Americans' values about, say, climate change and the inability of Congress to even have an intelligent debate on the subject, much less do anything about it, and the fact that we actually do things that turn our values into action. And one reason we're successful at that is that we're a community that has those expectations and we have a lot of community support for doing the right thing. That was certainly evident in this case. But it's also because we have distributed leadership on this council and that people are able to lead on something that they're passionate about and effective on. And that's exactly what's happened in this case. So Commissioner Fritz, thank you for your leadership. This is something that we should all be proud of. We turned a broadly shared value about what people should have a right to expect in the workplace into something real, and I look forward to seeing it go into action. Aye.
Mayor, would you consider going to 979 first? Because I think that's
I would be happy to do that.
You may be losing a couple of...
Yep, we're going to lose a couple of people here shortly. So 979 was pulled from consent.
I'd be happy to tee it up if you'd recognize me.
Okay.
979, pay claim of Derek Holland in the sum of $13,368 involving the Water Bureau.
Okay, Commissioner Fritz. Oh, Fish. All right, I did it. And we all do it.
Thank you, Mayor. this relates to a claim that arose in October of last year involving a Water Bureau crew improperly flushing a water main, which resulted in water damage to Mr. Holland's home, which was downstream from the flushing, damaging his home, yard, deck, and retaining walls. The Bureau then acknowledged its responsibility and liability. This was a negotiated settlement, and it is to be paid out of the city's insurance and claims fund. And while it occurred under the watch of a prior commissioner in charge, it is now being brought forth as simply seeking council authority to consummate the settlement.
Okay, great explanation. Anyone want to testify on this item? Not? Well, go ahead.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I noticed this item because before I was retired from federal government, I was a utility supervisor. So I was curious of what happened, and I looked at the accident and realized that the water department opened up a fire hydrant and flooded the area and flooded a man's house, basically what happened. And I was curious, if I was the utility supervisor in charge of that in the federal sector, I'd be in a lot of trouble. And the $13,000 settlement, I have no objections to that at all. I think it's low. I looked at it and I just said, well, you know, the basement maybe got away. I was curious what happened to the supervisors in charge of that. When something like this happens, there should be accountability. And I know it from being the supervisor that would be in that position at one time. And I was. I was at Long Beach Naval Shipyard. We had a lot of accidents, and we had to answer for them. And I was curious, does anybody know if anything happened to anybody that they turned on a fire hydrant without using hoses, just turned it on?
Joe, I'll respond to that quickly. It's part of the regular routine at maintenance of all of our fire hydrants and other mains that they are occasionally flushed. And we're required to do it for a number of reasons, including making sure that they're operational in the event there's a fire in that community. So this is part of the normal routine maintenance. This occurred because the water, which would normally flow downhill along the street, crossed over into someone's house. It was a non-foreseeable event, but the Water Bureau did not object, did not contest liability, because we learned, apparently the Bureau learned some things from this that we're going to put into practice going forward and felt that it was appropriate to settle with the property owner. But we do this throughout the city on a regular timeline, and if we don't, we're putting people at greater risk for the possibility of a malfunctioning water main or fire hydrant in the event it's really needed around a fire or a public emergency. So,
see, what we would have done is to attach hoses and take it all the way down the hill. If there was any incline at all, we would have attached hoses. So there would be no possibility of flooding out a house. All I'm saying is in the city, in the police department, in the water department, all of the departments, there should be some accountability for this stuff. You know, if you say, hey, you know, we're not going to contest this because it's right at the borderline of $10,000, and you lawyers know that, that's the magic number. If you go below $10,000, you probably are going to get a settlement because it costs that much money to go to court. So people don't want to do that. It's just that our organization looks at the city and says, what's the accountability? That's what we ask. And in this case, there is none. None. Sorry.
Thank you.
And we just like pointing it out.